Hello, welcome to this podcast on how artificial intelligence and machine learning are audited. We are going to have a discussion here today with Germond Hagen of Two Fifth Consulting. I will turn it over to him to introduce himself in just a minute. But first, I'd like to give you a sense of where we're going to go here in this discussion. It's essentially primarily a discussion with Germond. I will step in and introduce topics and other approaches as we get through this today. But the idea is to give our audience, you the listener, an idea of how this process works. It is a fairly new topic, and it is one that touches many different aspects of the enterprise. So with that said, Germond, I should also mention that Germond and I work together in this area, and he has an incredible background that is perfect for this area. So with that said, Germond, if you would introduce yourself and your firm, and we'll then go from there.
Perfect. Thanks for having me. I think you're too kind. I'll talk a little. So my name is Germond Hagen, founder and principal of Two Fifth Consulting. Started off my career as, I guess, a lot of IT auditors at what was then a Big Six audit firm, Coopers & Lybrand, and then continued on to various IT audit, IT compliance, risk, and regulatory examination jobs or regulatory compliance jobs. I've worked many companies, some on Wall Street, a lot of the mega banks, so a few of the mega banks, TIAA Cref, which is one of the larger annuity firms, and several large manufacturers, Philip Morris and Johnson & Johnson, as a worldwide auditor. Also ran an ethical hack governance process for Citigroup, Cash and Trade. Started the first technology second line of defense over at TIAA Cref, and then ended my corporate career at Freddie Mac, where I was the interim head of regulatory affairs with the primary focus on IT and finance. So done, I think, quite a number of things with respect to IT risk, audit, and compliance in the field, and then also well-versed in the three lines of defense that's generally a practice in the FIs and in the states.
Got it.
And then, you know, I guess now I'm running Two Fifth Consulting, where we give audit, compliance, security advice, and run a small managed service provider.
Got it. Perfect. Well, yes, I think that's a great background. And if I understood correctly, you were 25 years in the business. We were around when some of the first auditing frameworks were birthing themselves, NIST 800 and so forth, which is great because you've seen it all.
In COVID 1.0.
Wow. We were mentioning in our last earlier that Two Fifth and 25 years, it's maybe a new way for you to brand yourself. I don't know. In any event, and I'm in a similar place in my career. So great. Well, thank you. Well, I think what we'll do is what do you think or how does someone in your role for, let's say, a mid-sized company on a fairly challenging engagement, how do you approach the process of an audit? Just sort of maybe a generic, to the extent that you can, view of how that works and the way that you think of it, and the way you execute.
So generally, when I start any audit, I want to understand the business and understand the organizational model, as well as the actual model itself and the compliance requirements. Generally, that gives me a good idea on, you know, what's actually working well and what's not. Also, the background to understand the controls that are in place. That's key to determine the scope and generally figuring out how much time I'm going to spend in specific areas.
Right. And I think you touched on something that I was an auditor back in the day in a different context, but that you are going to focus on where you see where the problems are. So there's no one size fits all. You go in and you assess things at a basic level, and then you focus on the places where the problems are.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, we look for gaps in documentation, and then overly complex processes with multiple handoffs, with multiple people, and things that generally aren't automated, which are very likely to fail.
Got it. Great. Thank you. And with regard to what you see as the largest need, let's say two, what do you think is the most important thing that you would like to see when you come into an audit?
Oh, I always love to see, well, maybe it's three things. I always love to see documentation and good form passes a lot of audits and a lot of regulatory exams. Mm-hmm. I like to always see that security was top of mind during development. Knowing that the developer wasn't just trying to get the process to work or the model to work, but that it was secure and they took the proper measures to ensure that the data was secure and that they weren't violating any particular privacy or any other regulatory concerns.
Yeah, and I think in a past conversation you mentioned process was another one that stood out.
Yeah, well, the procedures are going to, I guess point me to process. The system development lifecycle is something, if it's documented, the process is there and it's repeatable. That always definitely helps. I'd love to see that.
Yep, got it. Okay, and I guess the ability to see that they have a predefined process for whatever they're doing, so that you know that they've been following a certain series of I guess that comes up in the documentation. So,
So again, the development lifecycle, if it's defined, is going to, talk about all the requirements in order to introduce something as a new product. Mm-hmm. What are the requirements for it to pass after it's been developed? What are the number of acceptable defects? So all those things you'd love to see in the actual process, as well as sign off and review.
Got it. Okay, great. Thank you. So what I'm going to do now is just from my piece here is to discuss the AI audit side of this in a focused way. And then we're going to go back into the larger audit frameworks and then go into the three lines of defense with Germond. So basically what we look for on the technology side, and I know that Germond is well versed in this, but from the standpoint of the actual implementation, the data science piece and such generally comes on the Privacy Lab side, is that we're really looking for three basic things. And again, we're just focusing strictly on the model itself. The first part is to make sure that there's a governance process. When you're building the model, are you documenting what you're doing? So as you go from one version of the model to the next, you're documenting that, you're recording what's being done. What went wrong? How was it fixed? Where's the data coming from? So that's the first piece. The next one is the ability to understand what the model is actually doing. There are algorithms and resources that can be used to help determine what a model is doing. There's this ironic inverse relationship with the simplicity of a model, which aren't typically as accurate as the complex models. So the complex models tend to be focused on. However, they're the least explainable. And I'll give a quick example, is this one where there was you'll find this discussed out in the world of explainability. There was a researcher who had thousands and thousands of pictures of huskies and thousands of pictures of wolves. And the goal was to try and determine, if I was given a new picture, would I be able to tell if it was a husky or a wolf? And so what it did was this deep learning neural network had like 90% accuracy, but it was picking the snow that was in the background of the wolves because that's all it had. It doesn't care what it finds in the data. So the idea there is that understanding how the model works, what features is it finding in order to make a decision, has to be known by the data scientists and by the domain experts. So that's the next layer of designing a, or of understanding and auditing a model. Because if you don't understand that, if you don't just know what it's doing, then you don't know if it's going to misbehave, it's going to cause some sort of error. You know if it's going to generate bias or fairness, which is very big in compliance. So these are the basic buckets that are in there. There is a process that is being used to audit the data science workflow. When I was in my master's program in data science at Northwestern, all the assignments had to follow what was called the CRISP-DM. It's called the Cross-Industry Standard Process. Cross-Industry Standard Process for Data Mining, CRISP-DM. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so if you Google that, it's basically kind of changed names since it was bought by IBM, I believe. But this is the standard that is being used in the audit frameworks. There are two audit frameworks that I would give a shout out to. One is called the Information System Audit and Control Association. Has a framework that they've developed. I like their approach because of how it leverages the CRISP-DM framework. But it's the ISACA, ISACA. If you do a Google on machine learning audit, you will find plenty. I would give you a link, but it changes often enough that it's better to just start new and look at it. The other framework, which I'll mention, is the Institute of Internal Auditors. They have what's called an Artificial Intelligence Auditing Framework. Again, these are approaches by the various auditing associations on this topic. We do see some new efforts with the European Union. They have a proposed regulation on artificial intelligence. We already have a podcast on that with Steve and Wu. There's also new guidance coming out with the OCC in banking and financial services, which I know Germond is close to. Yeah. But so that's sort of the basis there. There is the way you audit a model and the auditing frameworks that are around that. So now I'd like to rope you back in, Germond, on that aspect of it, because I know there are people who specialize in auditing the AA model, and there are people who specialize in auditing IT and compliance and so forth. But bringing the two together is really where I think we're two-fifth.com, Two-Fifth Consulting, and Privacy Labs, brings those two together in a way that you must, because of how interrelated they are. There's a horizontal aspect to this that's required. So I think maybe the best way to look at this, Germond, is to look at the three lines of defense as a general coverage. What do those three lines of defense do? And then we can go into how that applies to artificial intelligence.
Okay, so, you know, a generally accepted control model and the financial FI space, as they call it, is the three lines of defense, right? So the first line of defense is the actual business, their policies, procedures, and controls that are in place. And those controls generally are accompanied by a governance area within the business that, you know, takes a sample or a look at the outputs that are created from various processes. And that's the first line of defense. So the business actually executing and then with some level of review. The second line of defense includes what they generally refer to as kind of like the risk area. And this area kind of puts together the guidelines as to, you know, basically the boundaries as to how far the business can go. So what's the acceptable amount of risk that a particular process could basically accumulate either over a certain time or the occurrence of a process. So basically establishing kind of an error ratio in a business acceptance. And then the third line of defense is audit, where the auditors actually come in, review the process is under scope, and then understand how well the risk function is working to support that process. So, you know, are the businesses taking undue risk? Are the risks being identified? Are they being calculated and quantitated, where the business executives actually know what their exposure is, whether it be reputational, financial, operational, et cetera.
Interesting. So it sounds like a maturity process where they first start with the business, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the first line is really the commercial goal of the enterprise and the controls around that. The next one is to take that and look at the risk that's involved, to kind of make sure that it's not crossing any of the lines that it should. And the last one is sort of an objective review of what's happened to that point. Is that a fair statement, or am I?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's basically, is the business executing? Do they have some tolerances that they put in place to determine what's acceptable? Then is risk coming in, doing another review to ensure that those risk tolerances are actually working? And if a number of risks are being accumulated, how does that impact the business's either financial or reputational posture or risk, so to speak? And then last, you're right, the audit. Are those two functions, the checkers and the actual makers, executing as designed? And then, you know, with efficiency in some reviews.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a way of going in and going over everything, making sure it's sort of a double check on things.
Yeah, the checker's checking the checker is the exact thing I'd like to say.
I see. And that should be an objective party, I suppose. So I think that what I'll do is I'm just going to go briefly over. Remember, we mentioned CRISP-DM because I think there's some overlap and a way in which we can learn from those three lines with regard to the CRISP-DM. There's six stages. I'll just go with them very briefly. The first is the business understanding, which makes sense. And by the way, CRISP-DM is the way in which the scientists who use the science quality check what they're doing to make sure that that science is being executed in its proper way, just like any other science. Starts with the business understanding. What's the goal? Then there's data understanding, looking at the data, trying to understand how much there is. If there isn't enough, or it's too lopsided or too sparse, it may kill the whole idea of using machine learning at all. But that's what happens there. Then there's data preparation, which is the third of the six steps. That's where you look at odd values, missing values, skewed information, and you clean it, basically clean it up basically, and you normalize it. So you get dates are at the same format, names, first name, last name is always the same format, and so forth. Then the fourth step is the actual model development itself, where we talked about explainability, things like that. We look at those types of things, and we make sure that the model is going to actually execute on the commercial purpose that it was being created for. There's a goal here. This model has to do something that results in a net gain. Then the fifth step is evaluation, where they test the model on other data to make sure that it's working properly. Because often the model is trained on what's called a training set, but that becomes kind of siloed. They bring in new data to see how the model performs on different types of data and different scenarios to see how well it works on a broad scheme. Then it's deployed into, this is the sixth step, is deployed into the enterprise infrastructure where it actually does its job. It's actually doing what it's expected to do. And there's an aspect of that where there's, you have to monitor that to make sure that it doesn't go off the rail while it's out there doing its job. So those are the six steps of CRISP-DM. And if we map that back over to the three lines of defense, I think it kind of follows the same process, is that as you go through those three lines, you are kind of, with regard to the specific aspects of the model development, you're sort of reviewing the model across those three lines of defense. And
go ahead. From what it sounds like, it seems like the CRISP-DM is, you know, more a development lifecycle with respect to developing AI products. But it encompasses everything that, you know, we historically knew as the IT audit approach, right?
Yes.
And then you have to, of course, I think what we talked about earlier was determine how far do you go? So what is the scope of the review? Because it could get pretty complex pretty quick, I would think.
Yes. And I think this is, again, touching on the horizontal aspects of the audit, sort of bringing that full circle here, is that when you do look at let's say in the second line of defense where you're looking at the risks, a lot of those are things like privacy regulation, data protection, security. In particular for data science, the security of the development cycle, which is key, which you brought up earlier, Tremond. And then in the final case, we have the third-party auditor or the internal objective auditor who comes in and just brings a fresh, objective, neutral view to that entire process. And so I think one of the things that, we would offer here is that the person, the entity that, that does this, as in the case of Two Fifth and Privacy Labs, we know that we have to look horizontally because machine learning draws from data that is coming from many different places. And often that goes into a public cloud. And you have to look at the privacy regulations that, attach to that. You have to look at the data protection and cybersecurity, information security that touches that. You have to look at the software development lifecycle. So what I would call in the data lineage, where's the data coming from?
Absolutely.
And yeah, and then wrap that around the business purpose. And look again at all those areas horizontally. Every time you look at an audit of AI, you are part and parcel to the privacy, the data protection, and any other governance governance or compliance requirements that would go along with it. And I think that's where, you know, our ability together to accommodate that horizontal aspect is perfect with regard to the joint, you know, what we do is the two of us.
Yeah.
So one of the things we can do is, I think, Jermond, you have some ideas on how we can, you know, help people prepare for an audit and then how we can be a good source of an objective.
Yeah, so a lot of what I've been doing now is helping firms, medium, small to medium firms, prepare for audits, which is essentially putting them through an audit or mock examination before they have to actually learn the results in the real world. So, you know, going through an actual audit, determining what the weaknesses are, and then we also assist with some of the deficiencies and a remediation. So this way, we could give them a real world view of what the auditor or regulatory examiner would like to see, and then help them close the observations that we think are necessary. Whether that be, you know, just regular documentation or, you know, help with information security or privacy or with their system development lifecycle.
Got it. Yep. Yes, and I would imagine then by extension that if a firm was or if an enterprise was looking for an auditor to come in, that they would want to find someone who could accommodate the full horizontal spectrum at the same time. That saves money and it reduces risk. So I think that's where we would be well placed that way.
Absolutely. In the eyes of an auditor or a regulator, so to speak, because we have the experience in both areas.
Right, right. With your experience with all of those very impressive roles you had and the way you kind of came up in the world with this, you've seen it all. and on our side, we have the same kind of ideas. I've got, you know, some 20 some odd years in legal, and then later in the last 7 years in data science and technology. So in any event,
it's kind of weird to be able to say, hey, you know, I remember when they first came out with GLB, you know.
yes. Or HIPAA. yes. It's for those who don't know, I'm sure they do, but the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which applies to banking, which Jermond has spent the bulk, if not the primarily in banking and finance, and then with HIPAA, which is the healthcare.
Okay, yeah.
You know what? We're going to get into some acronyms that I forget what they stand for, but HIPAA is for healthcare. But yeah, no, I agree with you. And even going back to Sarbanes-Oxley and the Dodd-Frank Act and so forth, I've watched those come into life. So I think the background helps with understanding. So I think that pretty much does it. I think that we certainly could go on for quite some time here, but I do, Jermond, thank you so much. I did want to give you a chance to maybe just a last thought on what you think you think about the topic? Any last thoughts that you think we should impart to our, because I'd hate to leave without your mature and extensive experience without giving you that opportunity here.
Well, I would say the good news is that the U.S. regulation isn't pushing so far that there's an overburdense on new requirements with respect to AI. I think the requirements are general with respect to the development, but there are some things that companies need to think about. Not only is the model or AI tool working properly, but how are you actually applying the use of that tool from a data ethics perspective? I think that's something that companies don't generally think about when applying new tools or new emerging technologies. Is the application of the tool ethical? And of course, as you know, can you explain it? Those are the two main things that I see where firms would struggle, and or we can help them determine how do they go about documenting both of those to support their cause.
I could not agree more. I would not have expected anything less from you to bring that up. We probably should have brought up that. I think you're absolutely right. The ethical, the bias, the fairness, which is sort of, you know, it does permeate everything, and it is, it's downstream of explainability. So great. I could not agree more. And I think that was a great way to end things here. So I think we will do so. We will end it. Again, we could discuss everything. But Germont, I think that they can find you at 2fifth.com consulting. Yeah. And then fifth spelled out, no hyphen, just 2fifth.com.
Yeah.
And then we're at privacylabs.ai. And I think with that said, feel free to reach out to either of us. We do think we have sort of an unrivaled competitive advantage there. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you again, Germont. And thank you for all for listening. And watch for new podcasts from Germont and myself on other topics.
Thanks a lot, Paul, for having me.